I can think of some beautiful Indian musicians that, you know, would just really touch the heart. So where are they? So the talk tonight is called The Heart of Mindfulness. And I just want to... a recollection that I had many years ago in America, I met a Cambodian monk who was over 100 years old. And he was quite a strong practitioner, had quite a strong presence. And someone said, "What's your practice? What do you do in the morning when you get up? What's your daily practice?" He said, "It's very simple. I go through the body. I check with each part of the body. How are they? My right ear, how are you? I'm happy. My left ear, how are you? I'm happy. My nose, how are you? I'm happy." All through the body, part by part. And each part, I ask, "How are you? Are you happy?" "Yes, I'm happy." So it seems very kind of ordinary and not super spiritual. And why has been this is a 100-year-old monk? Why does he do this? And what about when he meets his back that maybe is hurting him? Does the back say, "I'm happy," when he really hurts? And what about if we do that and we meet something that hurts? We meet tension, we meet pain, we meet difficult thoughts, and we ask, "Are you happy?" And they say, "No, I'm totally miserable and fed up." What's this all about? And I think the answer is something which is important for us here. It's not about what the ear says or what the back says. And if the back says, "I'm not happy," that's what the back says. It's about what happens to the consciousness when we ask the question, "Are you happy?" And we get this answer, "Yes, I'm happy." That's where it works. It works on a shift in the way we look at the universe. So it's not small at all. And the reason is that our mind is so busy with constructing a narrative called misery. Not only misery, worry, uncertainty, what I have to do tomorrow, I'm not good enough, I'm missing something in my life, things are not working, terrible relationships, terrible politics, terrible world. That's 90% of the mind. So we forget what it is, happiness, really. We forget. Osher. Where is it? Where can we find it? And the answer is, we don't have to find it, we just have to notice it. We don't have to try and get it, we just have to notice that it's there already. We're looking over it at the problem. So to say to our ear, "Are you happy?" and the ear says, "Yes, I'm happy," it's actually reminding the whole being what is happiness like? What is it? Where is it? To remember that happiness is existence. So it's important in mindfulness to have that understanding, because like I said yesterday, mindfulness means, one translation of it is remembering. In the old English translation, it's recollecting. To recollect is a little bit more like recollect. To collect again, recollect, but remembering, to remember. And it means we forgot. And we forgot that happiness is in existence. It's just the dance of life. We forgot. We forgot what that's like. Or we forget. I'm not saying you all forgot, but there's a tendency to forget. We forgot some things which you could call default. Breirat Mechdal, the default aliveness, just being alive. We forget because we're so full of stories and issues and memories of struggle and pain and dukkha. We forgot that there's a default place of just existence, just aliveness, just beingness, just happiness. So ourselves know it, Ta'im Shelanu, they do know it. The clouds know it. Trees know it. And we forgot what we heard yesterday, this morning. Bodhicitta. What is that? Where is that? It's not something we can get hold of because it's not a thing. It's underneath all things. So we can't get it. We can remember it. Bodhicitta, pure awareness, open awareness. It's like the womb, a rechem, which gives birth to experience. We forgot the womb. We come out of the womb as a baby and then we start running. And we forgot there's a womb back there. We forgot it. We actually keep wanting to go back to it in some way, but we don't know where it is anymore. Actually, it's a good way of looking, you know, a one-liner of what's a retreat. Back to the womb. Chozer l'rechem. We forgot the big spirit that is there, that knows stars and loves stars and loves sky and loves the sky mind. We forget our unity. We forget that we are not separate from anything. We cannot be. There isn't two compartments, machlakot, in the world. Me and everything else. It's just impossible. But we forget it. So remembering is in the heart of mindfulness. It's remembering. And it does start with little things. So remembering is not really about, I have to remember the kind of cosmic rechem, rechem cosmi. It's not that. If we remember that our ear is saying, I'm happy, that's where it starts. That's mindfulness. It's remembering and waking up to the now. The now is the way we live in this moment with small things. This moment, this breath, this ear, that's where we practice. And that's fine. Because it's really one universe, it's fine. The ear represents everything, in a way. So we do practice with whatever happens. One step, one breath, one thought. That's the Chomer Gelim, that's the raw material, that's what we have. That's where we practice, that's the things, the appearances. We can only practice with what appears. Ma mofia, ma ole. So it really is that place that if we understand that, we really sort of know that the wind on the cheeks, as I was saying in the walking meditation this morning, that's enough to remind us of our beingness and our togetherness. with everything. So it's helped by understanding that mindfulness is not just about mind and about technique. It really has in it values and qualities which we learn. So when we meet our ear, this monk, meeting the ear, and the ear is telling the monk, I'm happy, what's actually happening is the attention that you give to the ear picks up a message called happiness. And the attention that we give to ourselves and to what's happening has many messages in there, many qualities in there. So I just want to mention some qualities inside mindfulness that are really helpful. And one is trust. And Simi mentioned the island, which actually is a very powerful image, because the Buddha gave this image, according to what I read from Stephen Batchelor, he gave this image just before he died, and there was very, very few monks left in his community. He had community of thousands and thousands, but at the end of his life, there were very few left. I don't know why exactly, they all were scattered everywhere. And so he was there with a few monks, and he was saying, be an island. And what he really meant was autonomy, independence, stand your ground, be where you are, trust. Don't get knocked over by the stormy seas. Hayama so'er. Today, this is super important. We're in crisis, which is getting more and more and more every day. I'm talking about global crisis. And every day it seems more conflict, more problems with weather, more problems with people, more problems with resources, civilization. So we really need to learn how to stand our ground and not be knocked over by all of this. And so, but we can remember trust as remembering, mindfulness as remembering. How do we do this? Well, when the Buddha said, how do you become an island to yourself, Latsmecha, Latsmechem, he said, you do it by paying attention to what's really happening, the truth of this moment as you experience it, and not the building story out of the experience. Not in stories which usually anxious and concerned, but in the truth of the meeting with this moment, in that truth we will find our stability, our steadiness. And you can, I'm sure you can experience it, you know, we're walking meditation during the day, one step, here I am, one step on this earth, one step, that's all it takes, I'm here, I'm taking a step on this earth. And it's exactly when the Buddha described how to experience this sense of trust, he said the same words in the Satipatthana Sutta. When there is breathing, there is breathing. When there is a feeling, there is a feeling. Knowing what's coming up, being direct and clear, this is arising right now and this is leaving right now. This is appearing right now, and this is going right now. So it's really going back to this moment, which is okay. This moment is the moment of my life, and here I live, and there I can feel I'm here. Trust is in this truth of this moment. Trust is helped by all of us. Trust is helped by mindful, being mindful of each other. There's many places that we can build trust. Trust is created by taking care. He didn't use sati as remembering. He used the word apamada, which is taking care. Being aware with attention, attention, taking care. I was just telling a story on the way here to a few of us coming from Clil, and I was driving the car and I was saying a little story that happened to me the night before we came to the retreat, where I was, I walk it usually without shoes in my around my house in Clil, and it was night, and I was going barefoot on a small path out of the house, and all of a sudden something made me stop. I really don't know what it was, because it was night and it was dark. Something made me stop, maybe in some little intuition, I don't know. I stopped, I looked around, and there was a sort of black shape, and I looked at it and it seemed like a leaf, and it seemed dead, and I looked more carefully. I actually went and got a torch, panas, and looked at it, and it was looked like a scorpion, but a dead one. So I touched it with a small stick, and it opened all its legs and its tail, and it started, you know, became a big scorpion that I just about stepped on it. And I was thinking about it that, you know, it wasn't quite clear that I was paying attention, that I stopped because I didn't want to step on it. I didn't so much think I didn't want it to hurt me, because I didn't know what it was. It was something taking care somewhere. There was care. I don't know how to put it more than that. There was a care. Attention with care. Trust is inside all our practice. We take care. We look after each other. We look after ourselves. Mindfulness is not neutral. It's about taking care. It's about allowing things to be like, to be the way they are. We actually can't go to our ear and say, "How are you, ear?" If we don't meet the ear, if we don't meet ourselves, we can't see ourselves. So attention already has in it this meeting, and this meeting needs a sense of trust. I trust you, my ear. I trust my body. I trust this moment. I trust this breath. Otherwise we wouldn't be able to go there and meet it and listen to it and be available for this breath and this moment. We couldn't be available, because we'd have issues. The trust allows us to meet our truth. So, and that's right in the center of our practice. Another quality which we'll be talking about a lot, we'll be talking about it more and more in this retreat, is kindness. And it's important to understand that mindfulness, sometimes called bare attention, and thankfully that's becoming an old language. You don't actually read it anymore. Dharma teachers don't use that language anymore. It used to be a language. I don't hear it anymore. But sometimes it does still comes in when you have mindfulness practice that is rather technical, that is rather mechanical. If you maybe go through the body ear, 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 nose, nose, nose. But you don't ask the nose how if you're happy or not. It can get a bit technical, physical. So we're not... mindful attention is not bare, neutral, technical. I said it before, but when I went to the unit in Oxford and spoke to Professor Mark Williams, who developed this method of using mindfulness for therapy, especially of young people with depression, called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, and I asked him, what about the heart? He said, the whole thing doesn't work without compassion. And we tried it. I don't know how they tried it. We tried to take compassion out, to make a technical form of MBCT, and the whole thing didn't work. It works because of love. And if we think about it, attention itself can never be neutral. You're attending to me, and I'm attending, giving my attention to you, because there's enthusiasm, there's interest, there's connection, there is a will to do that from both sides. And more than that, your attention to me and my attention to you is the gift that we give to each other. And when we give attention to our body-mind, we are giving a gift. We are saying, I remember you. I'm with you. I'm for you. That's written into the practice. And it's good that we know it. It's built in. I'm for you. I'm with you. What are you saying? Listening. I'm listening to you, my ear, my feet, my mind. That's what everybody needs in this world. If we could listen to each other, there'd be that's the end of wars and the end of conflict. So it's a gift that we give in our attention, in our awareness, this meeting. If we think of what is, I mean, in one word, I know it's too simple, but if we ask, you know, what is good parenting, how to be a good parent, it's only there to listen, to be, so our children are seen, are listened to, are seen directly. I see you. And it's what we need. We need to be seen. Nirut. To be seen. And we do it when we practice. We see. And it gives us a lot of support. It's not neutral. And apart from that, the attention and kindness is in the way that we join. We join the world. We come back into the world again. So we feel the touch of the wind. We are with the wind. The wind is talking to us. We're in front of a tree. The tree is talking to us. We are with the tree. We're with our body. The body is talking to us. We are with our body. This joining, this intimacy has in it, by itself, has in it kindness. If it didn't have kindness, we would only have resistance. It goes one way or the other. Either resistance, hitnagdut, keep away, or joining. So we're going to practice here to more and more to practice that sense of kindness, which is more than just a nice heart, sort of nice feeling of heartfulness. It's more than that. It's our ability to join things, to give our gift of attention. It's really written into to the practice. And sometimes we do need effort for that, and we'll be working on that. to be kind to places which are difficult, to be kind to the mind when the mind is shouting all kinds of crazy stuff. How can we be kind to the cacophony of the mind? So sometimes we need to remember, yes, also you. Gamata, gamat. Sometimes we need to remember. So it's a very beautiful element of the practice if we kind of keep going there. When we look at ourselves in the mirror with kindness and we see something beautiful in us, because it's that kindness or that being ready to be with ourselves, being ready, the gift of attention, it changes things. Another quality that I want to mention briefly, again we'll talk about it, is, and it's connected but it's a bit different, is the sense of reducing the pressure that we may feel to be successful, to get it right, to be better, to do it right, to get the right practice, to make sure that we can, you know, we have a pressure. It's the ordinary mind that's built like that. It does that to us because we gave it that authority on us. And it's the society, and it's the parents, and it's the school, and it's the whole story. There's a pressure there. So partly we can let go of that, we can soften the pressure. And that means we don't need to measure, we don't need to kind of fight resistance. I have to get there, I have to do it. It's always based on resistance. We build a wall and then we try and fight it, break it. So we don't need to kind of keep building a wall and then trying to break it down. Instead, we need to keep going with the practice, but be soft. We can't, again, fight to be quiet. Run in order to stop. Struggle in order to be happy. There's something basically problematic about that. Instead, happiness appears when we don't disturb it. Quiet will appear if we don't disturb it. Calmness will appear. Concentration, samadhi will appear if we don't disturb it. So it's a different way, and disturbing it includes pressure. It doesn't mean that we do nothing. We do practice, we keep going, but we can do that without pressure. It's an effective form of energy. Virya is to keep going steadily in our practice 24 hours without pressure, without measuring success and failure. And there is a kindness in that as well. It's interesting that in one or two places in the suttas, in the text, the Buddha talked about how much samadhi, that means meditative concentration, or how much mindfulness. The answer is mindfulness to the extent necessary in order to discover wisdom. Not mindfulness as an absolute, that you just have to keep being more and more and more and more and more mindful. It's mindfulness to the extent necessary that wisdom appears. Samadhi to the extent necessary. So what happens? What is this wisdom? What's the wisdom I here we're talking about? Opening up more space in us, opening up more meetings with aliveness, with default happiness, allowing things to come by themselves without us, if they're not disturbed. This sense of moments of chesed, if you like, moments of grace, moments of simplicity. They might seem very simple, but it's there. When the monk was saying, "Are you happy?" Ear. It's very simple, but in that moment, there's a moment of, because they're rega shel chesed, where just happiness, it's enough. Me and the ear, together we're happy. That's it, that's it. That's really little moments. They're the moments that will help us. They're the places. And the voices might be very small and delicate. Kold mama daka. They're not shouting, those places. This default, the places under, they're not shouting. They're there all the time. They're like the metehom, which we don't see it. It's underneath all the time. We turn on the tap, we say, "Oh, and there's water here," but it's the metehom that's interesting. That's the source of it. And there is bodhicitta, actually. And we just, again, remember it. We remember there is the real nature of things. It just needs to be remembered. It's always there. I think that's all I'll say right now. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes quiet. Okay, zman la meditatsiya b'halicha or rikudim. You choose. Oh, they stopped. Yeah.